Welcome to the Financial Flight Plan with Tim Estes and Bree Reyes. When it comes to your financial future, we believe the sky is the limit. We'll give you the proper tools to keep your engine portfolio running smoothly. Let us pilot the answers to some of your toughest financial issues. The Financial Flight Plan starts now.
Thanks so much for joining us on the first edition of the Financial Flight Plan podcast. I'm Walter Storholt, joined this week by Tim Estes of Estes Financial Services, serving you throughout the Metroplex with an office in Fort Worth. You can find us online at estesfinancial.net and on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And if you have any questions for us or want to get in touch with the team, you can always call the office at 817-444-8402. Tim, thanks for joining us for this first podcast. Looking forward to all the great topics that we're going to be covering over the next many, many weeks. And tell us a little bit about why we're starting this podcast and to folks who are listening today, what they're going to be getting out of this from an information standpoint over the next little while.
Well, the big reason is I'm a big proponent of education. All my clients know that I love to educate them on financial matters. And this is just another tool that we can use to get the word out to the people. Knowledge is power, and the more people have as far as financial knowledge, it gives them what I like to call the sleep factor. They're able to sleep at night knowing that they're doing the right things or they're making the right moves with their finances. So just another tool that that we have to offer to our clients and friends, and so that's why we decided to start the podcast. Bree Reyes, my partner, she's out on maternity leave. She recently had her son, and his name is Nathaniel Santiago Reyes.
Ooh.
And he came screaming into the world April 30th, and 7 pounds, 11 ounces, 22 inches long, and mother and son are doing fine. And we hope to have her back in the office and working with us again as soon as she gets back from maternity leave. So probably by next month sometime.
Well, that's fantastic, and congratulations to Bree, and that's fantastic that there's another member of the Estes Financial Services team ready and raring to go. That's quite like a prestigious name as well, Nathaniel Santiago Reyes. That sounds very, very stately. I like that a lot.
Well, there's a history behind the Santiago. Bree and her husband, Joaquin, did a lot of traveling in Spain one summer, and they went to little town called Santiago, and they just fell in love with the city. And so they were thinking of a middle name, and Santiago in Spanish is James. So they thought Nathaniel James Reyes. It's very Anglo, but it's also, when they use it as Santiago, it goes towards the Hispanic heritage that is the Reyes family. So it's a tip of the hat to both the Anglo side and the Hispanic side.
That's pretty neat. I would like to take that same strategy to for my wife and I to maybe name our first child. The only problem with that is the recent city that I've been to where we had something meaningful up in Washington. The name of the town was Squim, and so I don't know if that would fit well for a kid's name.
that could cause problems on the playground sometime later.
That's right. Jim Squim Storholt maybe would just not work out as well, but Santiago works much better for that purpose. Well, that's pretty neat. Thank you for sharing that with us, Tim. And we'll look forward to chatting with Bree in a little while here in a couple of podcasts from now. Well, our topic for the first podcast is going to be the pre-flight checklist. You might have seen that in the headline when you clicked to listen. Why are we talking about a pre-flight checklist? Well, this is the Financial Flight Plan podcast, and there's also a reason for why we picked that name. Tim, you have a military background, especially when it comes to flight. For those who don't know, tell us a little bit about your background and why we chose that as the name for the podcast.
Well, I was a Navy pilot, Navy fighter pilot for, I guess, a total of 20 years career between active duty and reserves in the Navy. And then I also flew for American Airlines. I was a captain with American Airlines for 24 years, flew total of 29 years with American. So a lot of aviation carries over into the financial world. And so that's why we named the podcast like we did. And you'll keep hearing and seeing as we continue on with these podcasts, a lot of aviation-themed topics, but they all relate very, very closely to financial and financial needs.
And I think we can all identify with, even if we aren't pilots, we can identify with the flying experience and what a pilot might go through, what it's like to be a passenger on a trip. And we're going to be taking you through that trip of retirement with information that you need to know and best planning practices. So without further ado, let's get to it, Tim. And the reason we're calling this first podcast the pre-flight checklist is before you taxi down the runway of retirement, just like a pilot needs to go over the aircraft, needs to make sure that everything is in place, they have a checklist that they have to go through before the flight takes off. All of these little things that need to be checked off and ready before you take flight, you're going to want to have the same thing in your retirement preparation. So we're going to call it your pre-flight retirement checklist. And one question that should be on that checklist, Tim, that needs to get checked off is going to be, how much income am I going to need? And how do you know exactly what that number is going to be?
Well, that's where everybody needs to know their budget. I see it a lot where people come into my office and they go, well, we spend a certain amount of money, and they may throw out a figure, and then we start digging down, and I'm going, okay, you tell me you only need, and this is an example, $6,000 a month to make all your ends meet, but you're bringing in $10,000 a month between the two of you. Where's the other $4,000? And I get these very strange deer-in-the-headlight looks, and so I'm going, you don't know what you're really budgeting for if you don't know where that $4,000 is. That's $48,000 a year that we're not accounted for. That's like throwing away $48,000. If you don't know where to send it or where it's going, then it's lost. And so you need to know your budget. You need to know how much you're spending, and you need to know where your money is going.
So that income question really starts with something that seems so simple, the budgeting process, but I'm hearing that maybe people often think they're budgeting properly or know what they're spending, know what it's costing them to live their lives, but often maybe there's a mismatch between that and reality.
That's exactly right. Tell me how much you really need, and then we can work from there, and we can determine how much income you're going to need in retirement. What I have found is people think, well, the financial industry has kind of led people astray, saying that you only need about 80% of what you were making once you retire. And I have found that that's not quite true, because what happens is most people, when they retire, now they're retired, they've got free time, they want to travel, they want to go see the grandkids, they want to take up different hobbies. There's a multitude of things that they want to do, and in actuality, their spending goes up. They actually, for the first 3, 5, 7 years, their spending goes up from what they were spending pre-retirement when they were working, because they have more free time and they want to see and do the things that their bucket list. They want to see and do those things, and it takes them a while to get through those before they start and settle down into what I call the stable years of retirement.
Yeah, retirement used to be back in the day, you retire, you know, you've got a couple of years of retirement, and usually those were spent, you know, sitting on the porch sipping sweet tea. That was sort of the viewpoint. But now retirement is, I mean, my grandparents, Tim, are in their 80s, and one set of grandparents just got back from an Antarctic month-long trip, and the others just finished what will probably be their last, but still, their last snowbird trip out to Phoenix, Arizona. And that's driving all the way from where they live in Maine. Every year they do a cross-country trip. So those are great examples of how retirement's a little bit different these days. A lot of things that get checked off the bucket list. And yeah, more money is spent in retirement than maybe it was during even those peak earning years of their life. And we've got to kind of take that into a really important realization. You touched on identifying those different sources of income, and that would be another question on our pre-retirement checklist. Have you identified all those different sources? I think people often kind of overlook where they can get income from. Maybe Social Security is kind of the one that comes top of mind, but there are other sources as well.
Absolutely. You know, we're having to look at different sources of income because you're no longer employed. So maybe you have a pension, maybe you don't. Maybe you've put a bunch of money away in savings. Maybe you've contributed to a 401k, or maybe you have annuities that you've funded throughout the years. But you need to know where all those sources of income are going to come from. If you haven't done enough planning, or if you, as we ask these questions, if they come up and you go, gee, I don't know, then maybe you need to give us a call here at the office and we can help walk you through it. But you have to identify all those different sources. People trying to get by on Social Security, I know a lot of my clients have heard the story of my dad. He was basically living off of Social Security and a few small investments, and it's not easy. You can't do it on just Social Security. So used to be you could, but these days you can't. So you need to be having a 401k or IRAs or something like that that's going to really carry the lion's share of the weight of your retirement. Because when you think about it, if you have any kind of longevity in your family and you retire, say, at 65, you can conceivably have 30 years of no income unless you have money saved up.
Yeah, 30 years of unemployment, the other way to say that, right?
That's a better way to say it. Yeah, you're unemployed with no paycheck for 30 years.
So how do you fill those gaps? That's obviously a big part of the planning process and why we spend so much time delving into that, because ultimately that's the key question. And other things surround that discussion, and we did mention Social Security, but it needs to be on the checklist also to make sure you're taking Social Security at the ideal time. I think, Tim, a lot of people probably think, well, as soon as I can take Social Security, why not go ahead and select it? Whereas often there's going to be a very strategic time for someone to take their Social Security.
That's exactly right. I've had too many people come into the office and say, oh, well, it's going to go bankrupt and I'm not going to be able to get any money, so I'm going to take it as soon as I can. And what they don't realize is if you take Social Security at 62 versus 66 or 67, you're forfeiting 25% of what you could be getting if you waited. And the break-even point, you have to look at longevity, obviously, but the break-even point between 62 and 66 is right around the 72 and 5 month period. So if you have longevity in your family, my dad lived to 93, chances are it's better for you to wait to at least full retirement age to take your Social Security. And if you can wait until age 70 from full retirement age, which depending on when you were born is either 66 or 67, if you can wait to age 70, now you're looking at a 30% increase from full retirement age payout to what you would get at age 70. And the break-even point on that is still around 83. So if you have longevity in your family, the longer you can delay, the better off you're going to be in the long run.
Yeah, I think those are good points to make and something that is going to be one of those different answers depending on your situation. So if you're following along at home or mentally making this checklist, maybe as you're listening to the podcast driving down the road, we've covered how much income you're going to need, what those sources of income are going to be, and when to take Social Security. Those are all on the checklist. We have to also add this, Tim. Have you addressed longevity risk so that you don't outlive your money? And you alluded to that with that 30-year unemployment that we affectionately call retirement. But longevity risk is one of those weird things that, what are the risk of living too long? That sounds like a good thing. Why would we categorize it as a risk?
Well, that is a problem. And it is a risk because I've seen people say, well, I've got, as an example, I've got $500,000 sitting in my IRA. Why do I have to worry? I can take out $50,000 a year. No, you can't. If you take out more than around 4 to 5%, that's pretty much the industry norm of 4 to 5% withdrawals from IRA money or savings. If you take out more than that, you stand a very good chance of running out of money. And that big pot of money that you have, whether it's IRA or savings or all of it combined, that's all you got. Yeah, you're going to have it invested, and yeah, you're going to have it growing. But for all intents and purposes, you're not going to go back to work at 82 years of age to refill that pot of money. So if it runs out, now you're in trouble. And the options are bad. All of them are bad. First option that you have is you end up having to set your thermostat at 50 degrees and walk around with a blanket around your shoulders. Or you're back to like you were in college, you're eating top ramen. Or if you're having to take meds instead of taking it every day, you're taking it every third day, which is really not doing you a lot of good. And the last thing is, God forbid, and I know people have seen these people doing this, is you're standing at a counter somewhere going, would you like large fries with that? Because that's the only job that they can get when they're at 82 or 83 years of age, is they're having to work somewhere like that. Everybody's seen these people, and they, I know people say, well, oh, they just love to work because it gets them out of the house and it's something they want to do. And, oh, they just love people and they want to be around people. And I think that's false. If somebody had the wherewithal and the money, they wouldn't be working, but they're forced into it because they either took too much money out or they didn't prepare well for retirement. So you have to be very careful with the amount of money you take out.
Well, I know that we were going to eventually get to talking about the market. And yes, it's up next on the pre-flight checklist that we've got to keep in mind as we're preparing for retirement and our financial future. And have you prepared to handle the volatility of the market? And if that box isn't checked, you're not ready for retirement.
That's exactly right. And you have to have some of your money in the market. It's the only way you're going to be able to keep up with inflation. The two things that scare me the most are inflation and taxes. And inflation, I don't know about you, Walt, but I remember back in the early 80s when inflation was running 17%. Interest rates on home loans were 12, 13%. Yeah. In fact, I felt very fortunate to get a VA home loan at 12% because interest rates were through the roof. And to think that that couldn't happen again, because people have been spoiled to this very low inflation period we've had and experienced over the last decade or so. It can come back, and it very easily can come back. And then if you look at taxes, the highest tax rate was 97% back in the 60s. And we're in a very low tax rate environment. So not only is market volatility something you have to think about, but so is taxes and inflation. As far as market volatility, we can plan and adjust for that. We also have to try and plan for inflation and for taxes, but there's only so much that you can do because obviously the government sets the policy for tax rates, and to some extent the Fed through their policies affect inflation. So we can help you with the market volatility, and you have to have some because you want to keep up with inflation. But it's easier to take care of that than it is the other two.
And inflation is definitely something that's got to be on your list for combating that and having a plan to get around inflation. And you teased it, so let's go there, Tim. Are you prepared for the possibility of future tax increases? You mentioned what they were in the 60s, that highest bracket. We're not seeing that right now, but historically, we're just like at low interest rates, we're at low tax rates, again, in context of the history of our country, right?
That's exactly right. You know, the tax rate when it was initiated was only 1-2%, and through various changes of Congress and the executive branch, it has been, like I said, as high as the top rate of 97%. Now, we're looking at, what is it, I believe around $20 trillion of debt, and that's a lot of debt that the country has to pay off somehow, somewhere, some way. How are they going to do it? There are only a couple of ways to do that. They can tax their way out of it, or they can inflate their way out of it. In other words, let inflation take over. both of them are bad for retirees. So we definitely have to plan for taxes going up. It's like I said, it's something you can't control except by voting at the ballot box. But Congress ultimately is going to determine that. So you need to be prepared and think about how much of your income is coming in is going to be taxed. In fact, Social Security, up to 85% of Social Security can be taxed if you're over a certain income limit.
Now, these are all things to consider. That's why we're including them on our pre-flight or pre-retirement checklist. Let's just hit two more items here on the checklist. I know we could keep this thing probably going on for quite some time, Tim, but let's hit two more important items. One is going to be healthcare costs, and we'd be remiss if we didn't include that on this, you know, at least this page one of the checklist. Do you have a plan to address healthcare costs? How do you help people when they come through your door at Estes Financial navigate those waters?
That is something that needs to be addressed, and a lot of people don't really understand that. And you just have to have extra money tucked aside that you know is going to be to help you with your health care. And one of the studies that I've heard or read about is that a couple 65 years old today can expect to spend out of pocket, this is not with Medicare or other insurance, but out of pocket, $250,000 during their lifetime. That's $250,000 that comes out of pocket for their health care.
Wow.
That Medicare doesn't cover or a Medicare supplement doesn't cover. So it is something that people need to be thinking about. It is something they need to be planning for and cognizant of. You know, we talked a little bit at the beginning of the podcast that I noticed spending going up. Well, it's actually like a sine wave. People retire and the spending goes up and then it kind of comes down and levels back off and actually can go down below what their former lifestyle was like. And then as they get closer to the end of life, you see it kicking back up, and that's because of health care. So, you know, people tend to think that it's a linear line, that the spending in retirement, but it's more of a sine wave. It's more of an S curve, and it's because of the factors we've talked about. And like I say, at the end of life, that's where the healthcare costs usually compound and grow exponentially.
I have to say I'm impressed. I didn't think we were going to get a mention of a sine wave on the podcast today. I've got sine and cosine now running through my head, taking me back to the high school calculus days. So
that's, nightmares.
I appreciate that. That was actually one of my favorite classes I ever had. I had a really good calculus teacher. Also former military. He was a former Marine. And when you have a former Marine teaching you calculus, that creates fun times.
I'm sure.
He was one of the best teachers I ever had, for sure. So it's important. Healthcare, got to be on the checklist. One last thing, and now this might not be on everybody's list, Tim, at least not at the start, because we're really looking down the line here. But it needs to be on there. It needs to be discussed at a minimum. And then for those who it's important for, it needs to be addressed fully. And that's going to be a legacy plan and having that plan nailed down. How do those conversations usually go when you're going through this kind of checklist with your clients?
Well, some of my clients are very open to it, and I've worked very closely with estate planning attorneys to make sure that people have an estate plan in place so that their legacy is what they want. You know, I call it being able to control your money from the grave. And some people like that idea and some people don't, but you know, you can make sure that you have something set up, whether it's a will or a trust or whatever, because if you don't, it really leaves your family in an awkward situation. At least in the state of Texas, my understanding is, and I'm not an attorney, but my understanding is that if you die what is called intestate, meaning without a will, the state decides how your money gets divided. So let's just say that you leave a wife and two kids. Well, guess what? The wife gets 50% and the kids split the other 50%, each of them getting 25%. So if you're living in the house and you have a bad rapport with your kids, they can actually force you to sell the house and move out of the house because they own 50%. So it's very important that you have some type of will or trust or whatever. In fact, from a pure financial planning standpoint, there are four documents that I think everybody needs. You need to have a will. If you're going to have a will, you need to make sure that it gets updated at least every 5 years. You need to have durable power of attorney. That way, if something happens, you're incapacitated or somebody needs to help you out with something, you have that durable power of attorney to assist with any financial matters that may come up. You need durable power of attorney for health care. Here again, if you're incapacitated, then it gives someone the power to make medical decisions for you. And the last one's a very personal decision, and a lot of people, some people like it, some people don't, but it's something that everybody needs to consider, and that's the medical directive or the do not resuscitate. Like I said, it's a very personal decision. It's something that people need to at least discuss and talk about, and then talk it over with an attorney to see if that's something they want to do. I really think people don't put enough emphasis on having a will. I have seen families torn apart, literally torn apart, over a spoon. There was these two sisters. There was this spoon that had been passed down from generation to generation to generation. It had come over from the old country, and it was the typical silver spoon. Mom didn't put it in the will who she wanted it to go to. And so one sister got it, the other sister wanted it.
Oh, wow.
And they never talked for 20 years. They never talked. And it was split up, they were split apart over a spoon. So if you have any doubt as to who you want to get what, put it in a will. Decide right now. Take it as detailed as you can. It's well worth it, because the mental anguish and heartburn and the destroying of families that can result from not having it, you don't want to leave that kind of a legacy.
That's a story I'll never forget. Wow, a spoon leading to those kinds of disagreements. That's unfortunate and can all be avoided with proper planning. That's my big takeaway from that. Well, so we've talked on the podcast today, Tim, about healthcare, taxes, inflation, volatility, Social Security, income planning. Obviously, we've kind of covered all of the bases here. Tell me just a little bit before we wrap up about you and your team at Estes Financial Services, how you help facilitate this conversation and what role you take in the planning process.
A good way to think of it is think of us as a financial coach. You know, a coach helps direct the football team to win, or the baseball team to get to the finish line, or to get to where they want to go. And so I like to think of us as financial coaches. Both Bree Reyes and myself, we're certified financial planners, and we have a wealth of knowledge that we can bring to the table to assist our clients in making sure that they get to that golden age of retirement. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of things to be thought out and to be talked about. And it's kind of like you can't see the forest for the trees. You need a dispassionate third party to help you see where you are and see where you're going. And the big thing is you want to start with the end in mind. The end in mind being, I want a successful retirement, meaning I don't want my lifestyle to change, and I want to be able to leave to my kids or grandkids or my church or some charity some kind of legacy to perpetuate my name. So we can take you all the way through those steps and all that, and through those processes, and make sure that you have the game plan set up specifically for you, like you want it.
If you haven't had that kind of planning in your life before and you'd like to reach out to the team at Estes Financial Services, all you have to do is call them at 817-444-8402. That's 817-444-8402. And you can always find the team online at estesfinancial.net or on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Just look up Estes Financial, serving you in the Metroplex with an office in Fort Worth. Coming up on next week's podcast, we're going to talk about some of the rookie mistakes we see people make. And the great thing is, or maybe it's the bad thing, we'll find out next week, is you don't have to be a rookie to make these rookie mistakes. Everybody seems to make these from time to time, but we'll try to help you avoid them. So we'll identify them and give you some strategies to deal with those rookie mistakes that we see often on the next Financial Flight Plan podcast. In the meantime, you can always subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I'm Walter Storholt for Tim Estes. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week right back here on the Financial Flight Plan podcast.
Security is offered through Triad Advisors, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Estes Financial Services, Inc., which is not affiliated with Triad Advisors.